Welcome to I'm Spiritual, Damn It. I'm your host, Jennifer Weigel. Each week we have a conversation that's a little bit outside of the box, in the sense that we like to push the envelope from conventional thinking and interview authors who've done research that is definitely needed for our audience. And so if anybody is listening out there and you haven't heard of an NDE, that is the acronym for near-death experience. And Deborah Diamond is very versed in the NDE. I'd like to welcome Deborah to the program. How are you, Deborah?
Hi, Jennifer. It's great to be here.
You know, I'm fascinated by your story for a lot of reasons, but mainly because you're a former Wall Street money manager and artist who left your whole high-profile life to pursue one of purpose and spirituality, and that's exactly what I've done. I left my high-powered news position to dig deeper into asking questions. And so I felt like as I was reading your book, Deborah, that it was like, oh my gosh, I think this is a sister from another mother.
Funny.
Because, yeah. You know, you're digging and you're asking and you're questing, and that's how you gather information. And the more and more you dig, the more information you get. But interestingly, you know, you go to, was it an intuition development class in 2008, Deborah, in New York? Or was that something along those lines that actually changed your life and kind of opened everything up for you?
It was, Jennifer. Yeah. I was in the investment business, as you mentioned. That was my chosen profession. That was my field. I was a money manager for many, many years on Wall Street and a commentator on CNBC. And that was my job. But, you know, when I was in the investment business, I always felt like I knew things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I didn't know how I knew these things. And certainly the term psychic is something that never comes up in the investment business. It's just not part of that business.
No.
And so my boss used to say to me, you know, Deborah, you have really good instincts. And I thought, yeah, I guess I just have good instincts. I didn't know how else to explain it.
Yeah.
So in 2008, I decided to take an intuition development class in New York, which is what you're referring to, mm-hmm. because I thought, you know, I had pretty good intuition, and I thought it would be fun to take a class to learn some tips to tune it up.
Right.
And so that's what I did. Now, I live in Baltimore. I went up to New York for the weekend for this class. It was a Saturday and Sunday class. And there were about 25 people in the class, men and women. I didn't know any of them. And on Saturday morning, we began and we did a few exercises, and I was getting everything, and I couldn't figure out how that was possible, but the exercises were fairly low-key, so I wasn't, you know, very concerned about it. And then we took a break, and when we came back, the teacher said, now we're going to do a seance. And that was, you know, something I wasn't prepared for, nor did I particularly have an interest in that.
Right. Were you like, check, please?
Yeah. But, you know, I thought, well, it's still, you know, it's Saturday morning. This class goes on until through Sunday afternoon. And, you know, we'll do this exercise and nothing's going to happen. And then we'll just go into the next exercise.
Right.
So the teacher said, you know, I'm going to put you in a meditative state, and then I'll take you out of the meditation, and if you see anything, you see anyone, you know, you let me know. And I thought, well, that's fine. That doesn't pertain to me because I'm not going to see anyone. So she put us in a meditation, took us out, and then she said, does anyone see anything? And, you know, I looked around the room, and everyone was looking at each other, and I raised my hand, and she said, yes, Deborah, what do you see? And I said, I see about 50 people. So this is what happened to me. I mean, this was totally unexpected. I was overwhelmed. I was frightened.
Mm-hmm.
I really didn't know what to do. She gave me a little guidance. She said, if there's someone, for instance, that you see in the corner of the room, that probably means they go with someone sitting in that corner. And I said, well, I do see someone in the corner. And she asked me to describe him, and I did. I said he had long, dark hair, parted in the middle, a handlebar mustache, big white teeth. And as I described him, the woman sitting in that corner began to sob.
Mm.
And she said, I can identify him. That's my fiance. He died 2 years ago. And that woman said to me, if I show you pictures on my cell phone during the break, I have pictures of him, would you be able to identify him? And I said, yes, because he was very clear to me. So, which, you know, I have since found out. I was doing an interview a few months ago, and the person who was interviewing me said, so you actually visually see these people? And I said, yes. And she said, well, that's unusual because only 2% of mediums actually, you know, will see, you
right.
know, visually.
Clairvoyance, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I see them. And anyway, she said, during the break, she came over, this woman came over, and she had her cell phone, and she was flipping through pictures, and I said, there, that's him. And she said, yes, that's my fiancé. He died 2 years ago. And as she had said, he had she'd wanted to hear from him and had not. She believed in all this. And so she was very grateful to me for making this connection. And she thanked me, and she hugged me, and you know, that was something I just wasn't used to. I worked on Wall Street.
I was going to say, so you were how old at this time, Deborah, when you had the first visuals of, you know, dead people in a room?
Well, let's see. That was in 2008, and okay. I don't really want to see how old
I gotcha, but it's not like you were 18, and, you know, some people had this at the age of 6, and blah, blah, blah.
North of 40, let's
okay.
put it that way.
Yeah, because,
so,
you know, yes, this yeah,
so
for it to happen.
That's what happened, and, you know, now, because I had worked on Wall Street, and I was not accustomed to anybody ever thanking me, or certainly there are no hugs on Wall Street.
Right.
It wasn't lost on me that I had done something profound, something meaningful for someone. Right. And that was kind of what kick-started all of this. You know, it was, and then, of course, I didn't have a lot of choice in the matter. I mean, spirit kind of seized me, and I had to go along for the ride. So,
right.
That, you know, that's pretty much how it happened.
Yeah, and for you to go on that ride, you know, I interviewed Gail Thackray, who talked about how she went to an intuition development class as well in her 40s. And, you know, she came home and all of a sudden she could see people in her living room, and she was so freaked out that she went back to the guy and said, can you reverse this? Because this is really disturbing. I got to get back to my kids and my real estate. So, but she's learned to work with it. And like you have, you've embraced it. But you talk about in your book, Life After Near Death, that one of your children who's very, very logical, you told your son about this. Can you relay that story about what his reaction
sure.
was?
Yeah, so that experience happened on Saturday morning in the class, and the class continued through Sunday afternoon. And Sunday evening, I drove back to Baltimore. That's where I live. And on my way home, I called one of my sons. I have three sons, but this one scores very well in logic tests. So I told him what happened, and he didn't say a word. But when I was all done, he said, well, that makes sense. You know, we're just energy, and the energy has to go somewhere. So that gave me sort of a pseudo-scientific approach to all this, you know, so I wasn't thinking in terms of ghosts or, you know, something that I couldn't explain at all. I mean, once he gave me, you know, he began, you know, he talked about it in terms of energy.
Yeah.
That was something I could deal with because I come out of a left brain background, and so that was something that made sense to me. And that's not to say that, you know, everything was hunky-dory, you know, everything was great after he said that, because it still was a process of integrating all that into my life, and that took some time.
Yeah, and speaking of science, you met now several, as you write about in the book, several stories of people who've had near-death experiences, and some of them are scientific-based. I mean, let's talk about, I think it was Bob, the doctor from Northwestern, that had, was it cardiac arrest, and had his right there at, I believe that was Evanston Hospital, where he had his, and came back and became this amazing artist. And that's the wonderful thing about your book, is a lot of these people come back after their near-death experience, or let's say NDE, because it's easier, with almost superhuman powers, from being able to communicate with machines to healing their cancers completely, their addictions completely. And then the other thing you mentioned is that they look like they're glowing, almost like they're frozen in time, a lot younger than their years.
Yeah, that's certainly true. It's funny. I was just talking to someone about that this weekend. They were remarking on how someone that they had met who'd had a spiritually transformative experience looked so young. And I said, you know, that was certainly what I found with all the people that I met. And they had read the book, and they said, yeah, you know, they noticed that in the book. And I actually saw a picture on Facebook this morning of somebody who had one of the people from the book who was celebrating, I think, his 65th or 68th birthday or something.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy looks like, you know, 35.
Right.
I mean, he's amazing. So, you know, there's something about this process that seems to alter people's energy.
Yeah.
And in the process of altering the energy, you know, lots of things happen. You know, some people come back with unusual abilities and powers that they didn't have beforehand. You know, many of them look much younger. And, you know, there are numerous other after effects. including the search for mission and you know, questions about the nature of our reality versus the reality experienced in the NDE.
Right.
So it's a very complex subject and one that hasn't been investigated that thoroughly, even though there are now lots of books on NDEs. Most of them are personal narratives.
Right.
You know, people who've had an NDE and they say, you know, I went through a tunnel and I saw light,
mm-hmm.
And they tell their experience. Or there are some books out by scientists, and the scientists tend to look at NDEs through a checklist. They have a checklist of elements.
Sure.
Did you go through a tunnel? Did you see a light? You know, if you can check off, according to the University of Virginia's Division of Perceptual Studies, where they study NDEs, if you can check off 7 out of a total of 16 elements, that means you're a candidate for research. The problem with that is some people have, you know, incredibly rich experiences. They don't remember anything, maybe nothing or mm-hmm. just a little bit. Other people have, you know, experienced all the elements. I mean, you can't reduce it to the elements. The elements are sort of the sideshow and the visuals, and they become very important because the media has seized on NDEs. It's a provocative subject, and it's one that can be manipulated to be, you know, used in television and movies and whatnot. And it's a lot more interesting, you know, to show tunnels and lights and fantastic landscapes and, you know, meeting dead relatives. That's a lot more visually interesting than just having some talking heads that, you know, some people sitting around talking about their experience. So,
right.
You know, they go for those elements. And unfortunately, that's now become paramount, you know, in many people's mind to explain this experience. But it's not what the experience is about.
And how many people have you interviewed that has had an NDE? I mean, now, obviously, in the book, you've got many, many, many. But over since 2008, has it been dozens? I mean, it's just...
Oh, no.
Yeah.
At this point, it's probably thousands.
Yeah. I mean, you're just continuing the conversation over and over again because it's so much more common than people realize.
It's very common, Jennifer. Mm-hmm. There are, in the U.S. alone, 15 million people claim to have had an NDE, and of course, the phenomenon is not restricted just to the U.S., it's worldwide. So there's millions and millions of people who have these experiences. The thing is, most people don't discuss them.
No, and that's the other thing. I love it when scientists do, you know, and authors and like you going out, you know, especially people, though, in the scientific community, because what a lot of people will say an NDE is just a lack of oxygen and hallucinating and la, 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 la. If I hear that one more time, I'm going to bop somebody over the head. I'm sure for you as well. But when you know, like Dr. Mary Neal, to heaven and back, I interviewed her and she, you know, talking about being without oxygen for 30 minutes, 30. She's a living miracle. You can't explain 30 minutes without oxygen and having somebody live, you know? So there's obviously something bigger going on here. And I'm sure in your interviews, Deborah, you had that happen quite a bit.
Well, and, you know, science has some explaining to do because if all these people are suffering from hypoxia of the brain, they're all having the same delusion.
Right.
So yeah, that just doesn't even make any sense.
Right.
You know, there can't be millions and millions and millions of people having the exact same experience. This doesn't make sense. And now, one thing that I did, you know, when I wrote the book is I'm a psychic and a medium. I'm a practicing psychic medium. And I did readings on all the folks who I interviewed.
Right.
I did conventional research with them. I interviewed them. I gave them a questionnaire. But, you know, there are limits to conventional research when you're doing this kind of work because NDEs take place in a realm that we don't understand. They take place in a metaphysical realm.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, the scientific community has tried to understand them and examine them through the lens of the elements. But, you know, I felt like I'm a psychic and a medium, and maybe in a reading I'd be able to go where these people went when
sure.
they had their experience, and maybe I'd be able to pick up some more information. And when I talked to the people who'd had the experience, the experiencers, they were all enthusiastic about having readings because they, in fact, had questions themselves about what happened, you know, questions for which they had no answers. Who were the beings of light that I met? You know, why did I not go through a tunnel?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could give them questionnaires all day long and they wouldn't be able to answer them. So they were interested in having the readings. And that was very helpful because that brought in a whole other dimension.
Yeah.
To the work. And it took me someplace that I just really didn't expect to go. I mean, you know, originally I thought I was going to investigate these buckets of after effects, cognitive and physiologic after effects. And what happened was I was very rapidly taken into this whole field of consciousness.
Right.
And so that was marvelous and stunning and, you know, very hard to explain.
Hard to explain, and I'm sure scary at times, because just to even say from being a money manager to saying I'm a psychic and a medium, you know, there are so many people that have trouble with those words for some reason. I continue to see it on a weekly basis when I get emails from people telling me that I'm lowering my credibility by interviewing people such as yourself because they're stuck at a fear vibration. And, you know, Carolyn May said to me, she'll do a healing workshop and she'll witness someone heal completely. Like their arthritis was debilitating at the beginning and then it completely melts by the end of the workshop. But they go home to their life, right, where other people around them are filled with fear and low vibrational energy, and the arthritis comes back. And it's just holding that container, right, holding that vibration. Now, with people who had an NDE, in your research, Deborah, did you find that no matter what, that vibration is kind of in their DNA? It's like it's in their energy field. It doesn't go away. No matter how many years have passed, it's still always with them?
It's permanent. You know, once you've had one of these spiritually transformative experiences, you can't go back.
Right.
It's like your back door gets blown open and you can't shut it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some people, you know, many people would say to me when I was doing this work, how can I have one of those NDEs? They sound so great. You know, and I thought, wow, maybe I haven't done a very good job of explaining this, because you don't really want to have one of these. I mean, these are everyday, you know, normal people like you and I who've had these experiences, and their lives are turned absolutely upside down. And they just can't get back to their old lives. It's impossible.
And some of their relationships suffer as a result. I don't remember who it was, but I remember one of the quotes was, honey, if you'd only stayed the way you were, we would be fine. You know,
right.
Significant others have a real hard time with the new energy that comes in from their partner if they've had an NDE.
Well, it's the significant others. Yeah, I mean, it's the spouses.
Yep.
65 to 75% of spouse, you know, of marriages end.
Mm-hmm.
Because the spouse, you know, just can't handle it. And I've seen this with, many of the people that I speak to. You know, they come to me and they say, I don't know what to do now because here are the things I'm interested in now. You know, they become vegetarian. They are no longer interested in their former professions because now they want to do good.
Right.
They don't have any interest in kind of idle chit-chat, you know, going to the country club or the bar with their friends or whatever. I mean, their lifestyle is completely different. And it, in most cases, the spouse is still, you know, with the old lifestyle.
Right.
And it creates a lot of issues, and not only with the spouses, but with the families. There are many people I speak with who tell me that they just can't even discuss it with their families. So, you know, it's just one of those hands-off topics.
Mm-hmm. I think it was Dr. Party in one of the NDEs you write about, where you were asking questions and you were told by spirit when you were, you know, giving the reading to the doctor, and Dr. It's P-A-R-T-I, I believe. Is
mm-hmm.
it? Okay. So this doctor had addiction issues and was sick and cancer and all these things. And so, of course, after the NDE had completely healed, no more addiction, no more cancer. And you were asking questions and it was like you were told basically that acceptance is the key to mastering all this, not seeking answers, just acceptance. And I was like, wow, that's so huge, because I do keep asking questions. And of course, we have to keep doing that to get information, but also accepting what's showing up. The way it shows up, you know, has that been difficult still?
Help, you know, being human beings.
Right, right.
I know. And I come out of a background where, you know, my livelihood was spent asking questions. I mean, that's what I did for a living. So, you know, I can't help myself. But, you know, you're dealing, as I said, with another realm that we're just not accustomed to. And, you know, it's very hard for us to adjust to it.
Right.
And, but, you know, it's fascinating and interesting, and you know, I feel like I'm very lucky and very privileged to be able to do this work.
Yes, and to continue to talk in front of groups. I know you're coming here to Evanston to speak with the Chicago branch of the International Association for Near-Death Studies. That's IANDS is the acronym. When are you going to be in town so people can be sure to put that in their calendars? I want to make sure we don't miss you.
Yeah, thank you, Jennifer. I'm going to be, I'm going to be speaking at IANS on August 13th.
Perfect. The second Saturday of August. Mm-hmm. DeborahDiamondAuthor.com is where you can go to Deborah's website and find out where she will be speaking and get a copy of her book, Life After Near Death. But if you want to see her in person and have her sign the book, go up to the Evanston Hospital. If you've never been there for the second Saturday of every month, Chicago IANS is a wonderful organization that has authors like Deborah, people who've had near-death experiences and live to talk about it, people who investigate them like yourself or Paul Perry. One thing that really struck me about Paul's research, Deborah, and I'm wondering if you have crossed paths with Paul through all of these conferences over the years. Have you guys rubbed elbows?
I did not know him, no.
Okay. So Paul Perry was talking about how I think he's written 9 books on near-death experiences, but the one that he was the most impressed with as a journalist was the one about children. Because while a lot of adults could say they've read up on near-death experiences, as a skeptic, he was saying, well, they could, compare notes and get their stories and know that there's a light and there's a tunnel and there's a this and there's a that. But kids aren't doing that, right? A 6-year-old, a 9-year-old, if they have a near-death experience and they come out of this with the same story as the kid down the hall in another hospital bed, you know that something's going on here. They are not going to the library and checking out books on NDEs.
Yeah, it's funny that you mention that because I actually went to a wedding in Cleveland 2 weekends ago, and it was for somebody from my hometown in Ohio, and there were lots of people that I hadn't seen in many, many, many years since high school at this wedding. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, people ask you what you're doing.
Right.
And I was talking to a woman who was a pediatric surgeon.
Sure.
And a pediatric oncologist. So she dealt with, children who had cancer.
Aww.
And I said to her, that I had written a book on near-death experiences, and she said, oh, I'm very interested in those. And I thought, maybe she's just being nice.
Right.
And then she said, the kids always told us what happened to them. And she said, we would then tell the parents of children who didn't make it. We would tell those parents these stories, and they always found it very comforting.
Mm.
And she said, but, so many of the children told them these stories. And this is, a person of science.
Right.
And she completely believed it, because they're not making it up. I mean, a 2-year-old's not going to make,
Right. Right.
Yeah.
So in your research, Deborah, as you talk about, not everyone has the same NDE experience. Not everybody goes into the light. Not everyone sees the tunnel. Not everyone's in the stars. It's very different. I loved the Lewis story where, he talked about a booming voice, like a booming voice of God, like an Episcopalian God,
Yeah.
And in that reading with Lewis, you discover that an NDE can very much be reflective of how they would best accept it. Is that a good way to describe it?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. They're very much customized. Everybody seems to get exactly what they need to come back transformed. And, a question that came up repeatedly with most of the experiencers was, they would seem sort of embarrassed, and they would say to me, how come I didn't go through a tunnel? Or, I didn't see the light. Was my experience valid? Because, they all think that, they had to have done each of these things because mm-hmm. that's what they've been told. And what we found out was, not everybody, everybody's experience is valid, and everybody gets what they need to come back transformed, because the key is the transformation afterwards.
Right, right.
And, and we found that many people don't have life reviews because the life reviews are usually administered by some person of authority who you very much respected, who meant a lot to you.
Mm-hmm.
And, once I started doing research and talking to these folks, it turned out some of these people didn't have anyone in their life like that. They didn't have a grandparent, or maybe, the relationship with their parents was very rocky, mm-hmm. or there was no teacher, or anyone like that. But the life review has to be given by some person that they respect, because it's a teaching experience, and
right.
It has to be something that when they come back, it is meaningful. It was delivered to them by somebody meaningful. So not everyone has that, but as I said, they all get whatever they need, whether they have, one or two elements or 16 or none. Mm-hmm. But it's very much customized. It's very interesting how it works.
I love the story about the woman who comes back with this desire to learn and play the harp, you know, something she had never previously, was it Marissa, but not her real name, she had this, you know, it was like the vibration about the harp, something about the harp. And here she has very little money. You know, she's a filmmaker but she found a $2,000 harp online, and it's like, yeah, well, that'd be great, but I don't have $2,000. Then lo and behold, she gets a call. Hey, did you get that check for $2,000 that she was due for, you know, a job in her industry? And so, boom, she's got the $2,000. She goes, she gets the harp, and then everything sort of clicks into place so that she can continue to play this instrument to help people. Was it people who are near death that she wanted to play for in hospitals? I can't remember exactly where she was going to play the harp.
Yeah, harp thanatology, and that's exactly what harp thanatology is playing the harp bedside for people who are passing.
And so she now has this gift of music abilities that, you know, shows up in her 30s. I mean, I love that. And then there's the athlete who starts playing baseball in his 40s. I mean, this is, you know, just being able to get the download and then the math and the science and the communication with machines. I mean, what was the most surprising to you about the after effect of, quote, superpowers that you did through your interviews, Deborah? I mean, I'm sure there are a few, but can you remember a few off the top of your head?
There wasn't a particular story. It was more, I would say, you know, the realization that people's energy is altered after this experience.
Yeah.
That, you know, that's what seems to be causing these after effects. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so then the question is what is altering their energy?
Right, right.
But, you know, all of it is interesting, and, you know, a lot of it is inexplicable. But I do want to say for your listeners, you know, because I do get calls from people, and they tell me, I didn't come back with any superpowers, and mm-hmm. so what's wrong with me? And, you know, I want people to understand that not everybody comes back with superpowers. Everybody comes back with some sort of after effect, and it might just be that they, you know, feel like they have a mission. Maybe they don't remember what the mission is, but they know that they want to do something, you know, to do good.
Yeah.
It may be that they're more spiritual. It may be that they, you know, they can't watch the news anymore because it's too distressing. It may be that they become vegetarians. I mean, there's a lot of things that can happen after this experience. But, you know, just to stress that not everybody comes back with superpowers. I mean, the reason I wrote the book this way was because I was interested in focusing on cognitive and physiologic after effects.
Sure.
Because for me to write a book where I say, you know, here's 15 people that I interviewed and they all say they're more spiritual, mm-hmm. the first thing a scientist is going to say is, really?
Yeah, right.
What does that mean? Right. Here's somebody whose IQ was 122 before their experience, and that's documented. And after the experience, their IQ is 145, and it's documented.
Right.
It's irrefutable.
Right.
So those were the kinds of experiences that I was looking for. But there are plenty of other types of, you know, experiences, other things that happen to these people.
Do you have and do you enjoy Skyping or doing phone call readings from people? Since are you in Taos and in the East Coast? Do you still split your time between those two locations?
I live in Baltimore. I live on the East Coast.
Gotcha.
and occasionally on the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
I do readings long distance by Skype, and you know, a lot of the work I do these days seems to be by Skype. You know, for people all over the world. I just want to mention I'm going to be doing a holistic cruise in April of 2017 where we're going to some of the sacred sites in the Yucatan. So, you know, for people, and there'll be other readers mm-hmm. on that cruise and other psychics and mediums. So there'll be workshops and there'll be readings available. So, you know, people are interested, your audience is interested in something like that, they can certainly check out my website. There's information there.
Perfect.
That cruise is going to fill up fast. So.
I was just going to say that sounds like an incredible opportunity. And, you know, for the readings that you do, Deborah, I wonder, because you talk about how when you're doing a reading for somebody with an NDE, it's a very different, heightened experience. I mean, they're not asking you questions like, does Johnny like me? And am I going to get a res? Like, that's not what you're dealing with. When people have been in the light and back, they're looking for the core purpose of their traveling into the stars and, you know, all these other deeper meanings. So I guess for those listeners that are out there that are kind of like stuck in the, is Johnny going to call me tomorrow? I'm not saying that that's a bad thing. I'm just saying that means there needs to be some vibration rising, wouldn't you say? And how would you recommend that our listeners every day kind of breathe into their centeredness and get that knowing and get that clarity so that they have the confidence to try to be a better and higher vibration in their day to day?
Wow. Well, you know, of course, there's a number of things that you can do to raise your vibration. It doesn't necessarily mean you're going to raise your vibration to the level of an NDE. I mean, people ask all the time, how can I have an NDE? And the answer is you can't, because it's something that's directed by the universe. It's not something that man creates. Mm-hmm. So in terms of vibration and having, you know, reading for people who've had NDEs is very different than reading for those who haven't, not only because of the kinds of questions they ask. You know, people who haven't had NDEs, you're right, you know, may come and say, you know, like, when am I going to get my raise? Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're very concerned with earth-based topics, and that's okay. That's fine. But I found that when I was reading for the NDEers, and by the way, I read for everybody, not mm-hmm. just NDEers. One of the first things I noticed with the NDEers when I read for them, I see auras and I see chakras. But I noticed when I read for the NDEers that they all had two auras, and I thought that was really interesting.
Hmm.
You know, a normal person who hasn't had one of these experiences has an aura around them. And that aura, their earth-based aura, contains all the information that's happened to them in their lifetime. It's like a visual thumbprint. You know, everything that's happened is imprinted on that aura.
Right.
But people who've had an NDE have that earth-based aura around them, and then superseding that, surrounding that earth-based aura, is another aura. And it's a white aura. And it's just light filled, and it's just filled with light, and it supersedes the earth based aura, and it appears to be an aura that's full of spirituality and light and gratis of the universe, and it appears to provide a layer of protection and a layer of light that these folks return with. So that was just, you know, very interesting. And when I read for people now, you know, people come for readings or I read for them on Skype, and I don't know them. I don't know 99% of the people I read for. And when I look at their aura, if I see two auras, you know, the next question is, what happened to you? Did you have some sort of spiritually transformative experience?
Right.
So, and I, you know, 100% of the time I would say, they say yes. Mm-hmm. You know, here's what happened to me.
Right.
So it's very interesting. You know, it's...
So what do you do every day to keep yourself tuned in? Because you didn't technically have an NDE. I mean, you had some of the effects by going to an intuition development class, and it's incredible how it's transformed your life. So for the listener out there that's trying to expand their consciousness, you know, what's your everyday few things you do in the morning or at night?
Well, I had what's known as a spiritually transformative experience,
right.
And NDEs are a subset of that.
Mm-hmm.
I there are a few practices that I do, but, you know, much like the NDEers, what happened to me was permanent.
Right.
So, you know, I don't have to go out and retrieve it every day. It's with me all the time.
Right.
I do some practices in my house. Mm-hmm. I often will have a high vibration music
mm-hmm.
on.
Mm-hmm.
I like candles, you know. I do a little bit of meditation. I don't do as much as, you know, people would think,
mm-hmm.
Because I just kind of naturally go out there.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I do that I have to do is I have to ground myself, and this is true for, I think, a lot of people who are in this situation. So I spend a lot of time in nature,
mm-hmm.
And I have to do it to ground myself. And oftentimes after readings, the first thing I do is you know, when I finish a reading, I throw on a pair of tennis shoes and go outside for a walk.
Sure.
Because I've got to ground myself. I do some work with crystals.
Mm-hmm.
I also this is to clear myself, and I don't know if this is something you've ever done, but, you know, I often will have to clear my energy, take a shower or bath in Epsom salts. Is that something you've ever done?
Oh, yes. Yeah. So, Judith Orloff talks about the sacred, you know, ceremony of water all the time. She's always hopping in a bath after after something.
Well, it's not the water.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the water.
The salt the water.
Salt,
yes.
You know, seems to do something. That seems to, you know, be effective at clearing because, well, it's magnesium.
Right.
And
magnesium
is an earth element.
Yeah.
And, you know, it seems to facilitate, you know, grounding you.
Yes. Wonderful.
So, you know, so that's something else I do. You know, there's you know, a number of things that I do. And, you know, for your listeners and for folks who are interested in raising their vibration, I mean, I think Tibetan bowls are really wonderful.
Tibetan bowl music. Mm-hmm. That's beautiful.
Yeah. I like to clear people. One of the things I do is I clear people with tuning forks.
Sure.
And those are also very high vibration, and they're very effective.
Is there another book in the works?
There is another book in the works, yeah. And this book is not going to be exactly, it's not going to be about NDEs, but it's going to be about consciousness and cosmology and another transformative experience that I had that I wasn't looking for.
Oh.
I guess it was looking for me. And, you know, and it's just kind of leading me into another, you know, another area that's related, but not, you know, not specifically about NDEs.
Well, fantastic. I'm so looking forward to meeting you. I will be there on the 13th, Deborah, at Chicago Ions at Evanston Hospital. For anybody who's listening that wants to go, you just walk into the main entrance of Evanston Hospital, ask where the auditorium is, and they will guide you. It is free. They do ask for a donation if you have it because you get food. And it's great because people pass around the microphone and share their experiences. A lot of people who attend have had an NDE because, as you mentioned, it's a lot more common than we think. And it's a really outstanding place to find like minds, to get Deborah to sign her book for you. And just, you know, the second Saturday of every month, it's a great place to go and get your mind kind of tuned in to something like we've talked about, the higher vibration. And if you want to get a reading with Deborah, you go to DeborahDiamondAuthor.com. You can also find her on Facebook at Facebook.com/LifeAfterNearDeath, or just go on Amazon and order the book. No, do it on Deborah's website. That'd be better. Life After Near Death, Miraculous Stories of Healing and Transformation in the Extraordinary Lives of People with Newfound Powers. Deborah Diamond, it's been a pleasure to have you on the podcast, and keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you, Jennifer. I enjoyed it.
Okay, I'm Spiritual Dammit. I'm JenWeigel.com. Thanks to Mike Heidemann for keeping everything going, and we will see you next time.